Dirk carried the dog under his right arm, enjoying the hard, rubbery feel of the animal's compact body, carrying its 50-pound weight easily as he dropped lightly down the steps to the floor of the pit. Every muscle in the dog's body was strained to a fine tension, and Dirk could feel the jump and flutter of nerves and sinew. Every limb was stiff and trembling, and the deep, crackling snarls kept erupting up the thick throat, shaking the whole body. He set the dog down on the raked sand, with the leash twisted securely around his left wrist, and as the dog's paws touched ground, he lunged forward, coming up short against the leash so hard that Dirk was almost pulled off his feet. "Hey, you bastard!" he shouted, and pulled the animal back. Across the pit, Charles and his handler were bringing down Kaiser, and it needed both their strength, for he was a big dog, black as hell, and touched with tan at the eyes and chest, a legacy of the Doberman Pinscher in his breeding. Charka saw him. His lunges and struggles became wilder and fiercer, and the snarls sounded like thick canvas ripping in a hurricane. The timekeeper called from the parapet, lifting his voice above the excited buzz of the watchers. "Very well, gentlemen. Bait them." The two owners set them at each other with cries of, "Sick him up, Kaiser, and get him, boy, kill, kill," but held them double-handed on the leash, driving them into a madness of frustration and anger. On the short leash, the Doberman weaved and ducked, leggy for a fighting dog, with big shoulders dropping back to lower quarters. He had good teeth, however, and a threatening gape, enough to lock the teeth into the killer grip at the throat. He was fast, too, swinging and weaving against the leash, barking and thrusting with the long, almost snake-like neck. Charka did not bark, but the thick barrel of his chest vibrated to the deep rolling snarls, and he stood four square on his short legs. He was heavy and low in silhouette, Staffordshire bull terrier blood carefully crossed with mastiff, and his coat was coarse and brindled gold on black. The head was short and thick, like that of a viper, and when he snarled, his upper lip lifted back in deep creases, revealing the long ivory yellow fangs and the dark pink gums. He watched the other dog with yellow leopard eyes. "Bait them, bait them, bait them," yelled the crowd above, and the owners worked the leashes like jockeys pushing for the post, pointing the animals at each other and driving them on. Dirk slipped a small steel implement from his pocket and dropped on his knee beside the dog. Instantly, the animal swung on him with gaping jaws, but the heavy muzzle caged his fangs. His saliva was beginning to froth, and it splattered the spotless linen of Dirk's shirt. Dirk reached behind the dog and stabbed the short spur of steel into his flesh, a shallow, goading wound at the root of his testicles, just enough to break the skin and draw a drop of blood. The animal snarled on a newer, higher note, slashing sideways, and Dirk goaded him again, driving him further and further into the black fighting rage. Now at last he barked, a series of almost maniacal surges of sound from his straining throat. "Ready to slip," shouted Dirk, struggling to manage his animal. "Ready here," Charles panted across the pit, his feet sliding in the sand as Kaiser reared chest high. "Slip them," yelled the timekeeper. And at the same instant, both men slipped muzzle and leash and studded collars, leaving both animals free and unprotected. Charles turned and scrambled hurriedly out of the pit. But Dirk waited extra seconds, not wanting to miss the moment when they came together. The Doberman showed his speed across the pit, meeting Charka in his own ground, bounding in on those long legs, leaning forward so the sloping back was flattened in his run. He went for the head, slashing open the skin below the eye in a clean sabre stroke of white teeth, but not holding. Charka did not go for a hold either, but turned at the instant of impact, using his shoulder and the massive strength of his squat frame. He hit the bigger dog off balance, breaking his charge so that he spun away and would have gone over, but the whitewashed wall caught him and saved him, for Charka had turned neatly to catch him as he fell. Now, however, Kaiser was up, and with a quick shift of weight, he was in balance again, and he cut for the face mask, missing as the smaller brindled dog ducked, catching only the short-cropped ear and splitting it so that blood flew in black droplets to splatter the sand. Again Charka hit with the shoulder, blood streaming from cheek to ear as he put his weight into the charge. The bigger dog reared out, declining to meet shoulder with shoulder, and as he came over he went for a hold, but the crowd screamed as they saw his mistake. "Drop it! Drop it!" howled Charles, his face purple as an overripe plum, for his dog had got into that thick, loose skin, padded with fat between the shoulder, and he growled as he worried it. "Work him, Chaka, work him," howled Dirk, balancing easily on the narrow parapet above them. "Now's your chance, boy." Locked into his grip, the Doberman was holding too high, his neck and head up and off balance. As he worried the hold, it gave and pulled like rubber, not affording purchase or leverage to throw his weight across and bring down the brindled terrier. The smaller dog seemed not even to feel the grip, although a small artery had ruptured, sending a fine spurt of blood dancing into the lantern light like a pink flamingo's feather. "Drop it!" screamed Charles again in agony, wringing his hands, sweat dripping from his chin. "Belly him! Belly him!" exhorted Dirk, and his dog twisted under the big dog's chest, forcing him higher so that his front paws were off the ground, and he hit him in the belly, gaping wide and then plunging his yellow eye teeth full into the bare, shiny, dark skin below the ribs. The Doberman screamed and dropped his shoulder hold, twisting out violently so that Charka's fangs tore out of his belly hold, ripping out a flap of stomach lining through which wet purple entrails bulged immediately. But he beat the terrier's try for the throat, jaw clashing into the open, snarling jaw, and teeth cracked together before they spun off and circled. Both heads were masks of blood now, eyelids blinking rapidly, the eyeballs smeared with flying blood from wound and bite, the fur of the faces plastered with black blood, blood filling the mouths and turning the exposed teeth pink, trickling from the corners of the jaw, staining the froth of saliva bright rose red. Twice more they came together, each charge initiated by the smaller, squatter Charka, but each time the Doberman avoided the solid contact of chest to chest, for which Charka's instincts dictated that he must keep trying. Instead, Charka received two more slashes deeply through the brindled skin into the flesh down to white bone, so that when his next charge carried him to the wall, he left a broad, thick smear of red across the whitewash before turning to attack again. The Doberman was humped up from the belly wound, arching his back to the agony of it, but fast and lithe still, not trying for another hold since that fool's hold at the shoulder, but cutting hard and deep and keeping off his opponent like a skilled boxer. Charka was losing too much blood now, and as he circled again, he lolled his tongue for the first time, frothy saliva discoloured with blood dripping from it, and Dirk swore aloud at this sign of weakness and imminent collapse. Big Kaiser attacked again now, cutting in sharply, as though for the throat, and then turning in a low, dark streak for another weakening flank cut. As he hit, Charka turned into him steeply and snapped at his lean belly again, reaching low and, with fortune, taking a hold on the bulging entrails that showed in the open flap of the wound. Instantly the terrier went stiff on his forelegs and hunched his neck, bringing his chin down onto his chest to hold the grip. The Doberman's charge carried him on, and his entrails were pulled out of him, a long, thick, glistening ribbon in the lantern light, and the women screamed, high with anguished delight, while the men roared. Charka crossed the bigger dog's rump now, still holding his guts, and tangled his back legs in the slippery, rubbery pink tubes that hung out of the stomach cavity, so that he stumbled off balance, and the terrier lunged forward, hitting him solidly with the chest, knocking him into the air so he dropped onto his back, screaming and kicking. Charka's follow-up was so instinctive, so natural to his breed, that it was swift as the flash of a striking adder, and he had his killing hold, locked deep and hard into the throat, bearing down with the solid bone of his jaws, snuffling and working his head on the short hunched neck until his long eye teeth met in the Doberman's windpipe. Dirk Courtney jumped down lightly from the parapet. His laugh was pitched unnaturally high, and his face was darkened to a congested, sullen red as he whipped off his dog and turned the carcass of the Doberman with the toe of his boot. "A fair kill?" he laughed up at Charles. And the man glowered down at him a moment before shrugging acknowledgement of defeat and turning away. Dickie Lancome sat with the voice piece of the telephone set on the desk in front of him and the earpiece held loosely to his cheek, trapped there by a hunched shoulder while he trimmed his fingernails with a gold-plated penknife. "What can I say, old girl, except that I am desolate? But then Auntie Hortense was rich as that fellow that turned everything to gold. Yeah, that's right, Midas, or was it Croesus? I just cannot give her funeral amiss. You do understand, don't you? You don't. And he sighed dramatically as he returned the penknife to his waistcoat pocket and began to thumb through the address book for the other girl's number. No, old girl, how can you say that? Are you certain? Must have been my sister. It was almost noon on Saturday morning, and Dickie had the premises of Natal Motors to himself. He was making his domestic arrangements for the weekend on the firm's telephone account before locking up, and finding some wisdom in the admonition against changing mounts in midstream. At that moment he was distracted by the crack of footsteps on the marbled floor of the showroom, and he swiveled his chair for a glimpse through the door of his cubicle. There was no mistaking the tall figure that strode through the street doors. The wide shoulders and thrusting bearded jaw, the dark glint of eyes like those of an old eagle. Oh, Lord preserve us, Dickie breathed, his guilty conscience delivering a heavy jolt into his belly. General Courtney. And he let the earpiece of the telephone drop and dangle on its cord while he slid forward stealthily from his chair and crawled into shelter below his desk, knees drawn up to his chin. He could imagine exactly why General Courtney was calling. He had come to discuss the insult to his daughter in person, and Dickie Lankham had heard enough about the General's temper to want to avoid joining this discussion. Now he listened like a night animal for the stalk of the leopard, cocking his head for the sound of further footsteps and baiting his breath to a shallow, cautious trickle in order not to disclose his hiding place. The earpiece of the telephone still dangled on its cord, and now it emitted the high-pitched, distorted voice of an irate female. Without leaving the cover of the desk, he reached out to try and muffle the earpiece, but it dangled tantalising inches beyond his fingertips.
"Dickie Lankham, I know you were there,"
squawked the tinny voice, and Dick wriggled forward another inch. A hand, in size not unlike that of a bull gorilla, entered Dickie's field of vision, closed on the earpiece, and placed it in Dickie's outstretched fingers.
"Please allow me," said a deep, gravelly voice from somewhere above the desk. "Thank you, sir," whispered Dickie, trying not to draw too much attention to himself even at this stage. For want of anything better to do, he listened respectfully to the earpiece.
It's no good pretending not to be listening," said the female voice. "I know all about you and that blonde hussy."
"I expect you need this," said the deep voice from on high, and the hand passed the mouthpiece of the telephone down into his hiding place.
"Thank you, sir," Dickie whispered again, uncertain as to which emotion dominated him at that moment, humiliation or trepidation. He cleared his throat and spoke into the telephone. Darling, I have to go now," he croaked. "I have an extremely important client in the shop." He hoped that the touch of flattery might sweeten the coming encounter. He broke the connection and crawled out unwillingly on his hands and knees. "General Courtney," he dusted himself down and smoothed his hair, assembled his dignity and salesman's smile. "We are honoured."
"I hope I did not interrupt you in anything important."
Only the sapphire twinkle in the heavily browed eyes betrayed the General's amusement.
"Oh, but by no means," Dickie assured him. "I was..." He looked around wildly for inspiration. "I was merely meditating."
"Ah," Sean Courtney nodded. "Well, that explains it.
How can I be of service to you, General?" Dickie went on hurriedly.